is Steve Sherlock
for another Franklin Matters radio show, number 679 in the series. This session of the radio show shares the Franklin Mass School Committee meeting held on Tuesday, December 14, 2021. The meeting was conducted in a hybrid format. Six of the school committee members were in the council chambers, along with some of the public. One member was remote, Anne Whitworth, along with members of the public via the conference bridge, all to adhere to the social distancing requirements of this pandemic period. The recording of the public meeting runs about an hour and 30 minutes. The school committee did enter executive session and did not return to public meeting. Links to the meeting agenda and associated documents released for this meeting are included in the show notes. The link to my notes during the meeting is also provided. So let's listen to this session of the school committee meeting, December 14, 2021.
Time being 7:02, I call to order the December 14th, 2021 Franklin School Committee meeting. Meetings are recorded by Franklin Matters, Franklin TV, and shown on Comcast Channel 11 and Verizon Channel 29. Any individual who also wishes to record this meeting must notify the chair. Just an FYI, at the conclusion of this meeting, we will be adjourning to executive session and we will not be returning to open meeting. So at this time, I would like to introduce our school committee pledge student, if he wanted to come forward with his family.
Yes.
Can you put maybe a little more into the house, please?
Yes.
Hi, Matthew. Matthew Plekia, he is an eighth grader at Annie Sullivan Middle School and exemplifies the values of inclusivity, kindness, and perseverance. He is actively involved in the school community and has taken on a leadership role by being a member of the Peer Leader Program and Best Buddies. Both of these clubs strive to educate and provide an opportunity for students to connect and appreciate differences. He also enjoys being active and participates in the intramural club at Annie Sullivan, as well as in the rec department events outside of school. His favorite classes are history and science, but he works hard to do his best in all of his classes. Matthew takes time to study outside of school and has developed good habits that will help him as he progresses in school. Matthew is also a big Patriots football fan and enjoys cheering on his team. We are so proud of you, Matthew, and your passion for learning and helping others. So if you'd like to go ahead and lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much, Matthew. Thank your parents for coming out tonight. At this time, thank you. Have a good night. At this time, for this evening's moment of silence, we're to honor and remember the 26 victims of the Sandy Hook Elementary School massacre, which took place 9 years ago today. The anniversary weighs particularly heavy in the wake of the deadly shooting at Oxford High School in Michigan on November 30th. Though we will never know the full measure of sorrow experienced by these families, we can let them know that we stand with them during these difficult times. Thank you. Okay. Routine business review of agenda. All look okay, all members?
Okay. Madam Chair, may I make a suggestion that you do a roll call attendance? We have one school committee member participating remotely, so as we start the meeting, just take that suggestion.
Yes, thank you. I'm very sorry. Okay, roll call attendance. So, Camille Bernstein?
Here.
David Callahan?
Here.
Al Charles?
Here.
Dave McNeil?
Here.
Elise Stokes?
Here.
Megan Whitmore?
Here.
All right, and Denise Spencer here. Thank you, Dr. Hearn. I'm sorry about that. All right. So, citizens' comments. If there's anyone in the audience who would like to make a citizens' comment, if you could just So just before everyone comes up, in the spirit of open communication, the committee will hold a public participation segment about matters not related to an agenda item at the beginning of each regular school committee meeting. The committee will listen to but not respond to any comment made. A committee member may add an agenda item to a future meeting as a result of a citizen's comment. The committee will hear public comments related to an agenda item when the chair deems appropriate during the committee meeting. Topics for discussion during the meeting must be limited to those items listed on the committee meeting agenda for that evening. So sir, if you'd like to come up, if you could just state your name and address. Keep it to 3 minutes.
My name is Steve Joannis. I'm from 262 Daniel Street in Franklin. I had made a request for the sexual ed curriculum to Annie Sullivan, and I haven't got a response yet, and I was wondering, you know, if the procedure could be published, if the documentation could be published, and is it appropriate for me to leave a written request with you?
Sure. Thank you. Next. Oh. You can just state your name and address and keep it under 3 minutes.
Sorry, I'll share. Thanks, Rob. My 11-year-old is at Snickers commercial. You're not you when you're hungry. He's super smart, empathetic, sweet, but won't overwhelm. Documented symptom of his neurological disorder is that he loses a third of his age. His brain physically doesn't have the resources to properly disinhibit. It can't be punished or therapied away. It's biological. When he runs low on resources, he acts like a 7-year-old who's hangry. Except a Snickers won't fix this. Age might, but he succeeds with proactive supports so that he's not using up his resources. He starts the day with less than his peers, and his dyslexia and other factors means he depletes them more quickly because he has to work three times as hard. He gets support so he doesn't burn through too fast. An IEP, text-to-speech, social supports. He's having a great year, A-minus average. The classes have started getting harder. He's expressed being constantly overwhelmed, and it shows in his grades and behavior. On Wednesday, a girl who used to mock him at recess joined his group, unexpected and uninvited, and then on the way back to class, he shoved her. And they punished him with an in-school suspension. They said it was unprovoked because they ignored the antecedents and don't understand his disabilities. They said it was a second offense, so instead of sticking him in a room for half a day like last time, despite it doing nothing to solve the problem, this time it would be longer. His neuropsychologist provided detailed information on an appropriate neurological approach, as treating his disorder behaviorally makes it worse and would achieve the opposite of the intended outcome. And the district rejected putting it in his IEP and promptly ignored it. Just as they had ignored 21 of his 40-plus IEP accommodations intended to prevent this exact outcome, 21. They acknowledged he needs social and academic supports to succeed, promised those supports, denied him those supports, then punished him for not succeeding. He never had a chance. Thursday, I asked the central office for help. The special ed director told me she can't tell the principal what to do. The assistant superintendent didn't return my call, and the superintendent emailed me that he wasn't entitled to an appeal, but we could meet a week after his punishment. He was barred from his friends, denied access to his classrooms, lunchroom, most teachers, secluded in an office, but on display to anyone passing by, and told to do better next time. Remington leadership stood here and talked about restorative practices for their school improvement plan. There was no restorative anything for my son, just shame, nightmares, and a consequence of magnifying the precipitating cause. Fact. The school-to-prison pipeline is driven by exclusionary zero-tolerance policies. Disabled kids are suspended three times as often as non-disabled peers. Exclusionary punishments, including classroom removals, have been proven ineffective and damaging, and kids suspended once are twice as likely to not graduate than non-suspended peers. The impact of these practices is devastating. I'm asking this committee to review why a school claiming restorative practices for exactly these reasons rubber banded to a method unsupported by science and statistically associated with only negative consequences. I'm asking for accountability for the failure to provide his IEP, and I'm asking my Franklin PACE principals if all they're expected to do is determine if a rule has been broken, then apply a prescribed consequence. It's not unreasonable to expect that past trauma, doctors' concerns, and the district's failure to provide his IEP for the third year in a row will be factored in instead of a one-size-fits-all solution that hurts our most vulnerable and at-risk students. Thank you for your time. Also, it's not his teacher's fault. They can't be expected to put out fires on the next street when they're still putting out two or three fires in the street that they're on.
Is there anyone else in the audience?
Is that microphone working?
Yes.
Yes. If you could just state your name and address in the 3-minute limit. Thank you.
My name is K.P. Sampati, and you are 42 Palomino Drive, Franklin, Massachusetts. This is the initial request to add Diwali as an observed holiday to the list of no school days. I'm a parent, community member, volunteer, and my child attends Franklin High School. I would like to request committee to discuss at the next meeting about Diwali as an observed holiday. The town of Franklin observes numerous holidays: Christmas, Thanksgiving, Columbus Day, People's Day, Yom Kippur, and Rosh Hashanah. We connected to each other through a different culture with respective values. We have people from different ethnicities, religions, and nationalities. We are a growing town and good representation from several communities. Adapting an inclusive approach allows diversity to flourish. Diwali is the festival of lights, is celebrated by people of multiple faith, including Hindus, Sikhs, Jains, and Buddhists. About 800 Franklin families celebrate Diwali, the festival of lights, and could celebrate well by being together if it is a holiday. Every year, I am one of 5 million Americans who celebrate Diwali across our nation. I think it's more important to educate people about other backgrounds, and so that we can all live more in harmony, tolerance, and inclusion. A holiday for Diwali will be a great inspiration for students who are trying to fulfill Franklin Public School's mission of being a global citizen. Making it a school holiday would help people of the town better understand the cultural significance. It would definitely give a message to the world that Franklin is a flourishing by giving significant importance to diversity. I thank the committee for the opportunity.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else in the audience?
Good evening. Megan Benson, Winthrop Drive. I'm here tonight to address two topics that I've brought up and discussed numerous times with Dr. Hearn, with all school committee members copied on the emails, regarding the new mask policy that went into effect at the high school yesterday. As many parents already know, as of yesterday, the high school has allowed vaccinated students who have submitted a form and received authorization to remove their mask if they so choose. The unvaccinated students are still required to wear a mask at all times. Here's the issue. Dr. Hearn is claiming that the requirement for the unvaccinated is coming from DESE. However, the only directive that DESE has issued regarding the unvaccinated at these waivered schools is unclear and contradictory. Commissioner Riley states that the unvaccinated are required to wear a mask. However, he supports his statement by citing statewide guidance that comes directly from the Massachusetts Department of Public Health. This is where the contradiction comes into play. The Mass DPH does not require masks for the unvaccinated. It simply recommends them. So is the mandate coming from DESE, or does DESE want the unvaccinated to follow statewide guidance, which would mean masks are simply advised and not required? I've asked Dr. Ahern to provide clarification on this issue 8 separate times since November 19th. Dr. Ahern's response each time is a reference to the contradictory language I've just explained, and one time it was a reference to a DESE frequently asked question publication from September, prior to when these unclear DESE directives were published. I've also spoken to 4 different educational specialists at DESE, and none of them have been able to clear this up. The latest email I received from one of them was last week, and this person said, "I just wanted to let you know that I'm still seeking guidance on your question regarding the DESE mask policy in the intersection of statewide guidance." To me, that means that folks at DESE are not even sure where the mandate is coming from. Now, why is this important? It's important because of the way this new mask policy is being implemented. If 100% of the vaccinated students at the high school gain authorization to remove your mask, you are left with the remaining students who are required to wear one. This means that you have a group of authorized and unauthorized, which is the functional equivalent of vaccinated and unvaccinated. And unless parents of the unvaccinated provided prior written consent for faculty and staff to know their child's vaccination status, that would be considered a violation of the Family Educational Rights and Privacy Act, also known as FERPA. A FERPA violation is a very serious matter. If DESE is not, in fact, mandating that the unvaccinated wear a mask, this could mean that FPS has no reason mandating it either and makes this new mask policy that has the potential for FERPA violation galore unnecessary. Dr. Ahern, I'm very hopeful that tonight you're able to provide some actual clarification. I'm hoping that you've reached out directly to someone at DESE and have obtained additional information or a clear directive other than the two that you've continued to cite and can share that all with us tonight. It's imperative that this be cleared up so that we can move on to the FERPA violations that are bound to occur if they've not already in the past 2 days. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else in the audience? Or anyone on Zoom, if you wanted to raise your hand? Moving on, we have our Franklin High School student representative update.
Hi, my name is Robin Chaudhary. I'm the junior class president at Franklin High School. It's been a little bit since we've been here, so we got a couple updates to run through. Before Thanksgiving break, we had our first spirit week of the year, and it went successfully. We had sports day, beach day, pajama day, things like that. It's very good to see a large population in the school participate, everyone come together again. There's also dodgeball tournaments, spikeball tournaments. There was musical chairs, things like that. The drama department had a performance at our pep rally that wrapped up the spirit week before Thanksgiving break. And again, just good to see everyone together again, back in the school, kind of like a normal year. In theater news, there are drama fest auditions this week for a show called Cave Dreams. And not for the high school, but for the middle school theater program, Footlighters, there's a startup meeting on December 22nd after school in the Horace Mann Auditorium. It's open to all middle school students. For grade specific news, the class of 2022, the senior class, will be holding a fundraiser at Chipotle on January 3rd. And the class of 2023, the junior class at Franklin High School, is currently holding a raffle calendar fundraiser where kids are selling raffle calendars that are $20. Prizes will be pulled every day in January. They can be bought physically or online, and the physical sales will be due on the 22nd, and the online portal will be open through the 31st. Just want to thank all those local businesses that helped out the class 2023 in donating prizes. In sports news, the football team unfortunately lost deep in the playoffs, but they did beat KP on Thanksgiving for the first time in a while, so they won the Hockenmock Championship. The Unified basketball team wrapped up their fall season, and they will be going to Disney in June to represent Massachusetts, so congratulations to them. Also, congratulations to cheerleading on a very successful fall season as they won the state championship for Division I. And boys hockey last night kicked off their season. They beat Needham 4-3. And the girls hockey team is playing East Bridgewater right now, along with boys and girls basketball, who are playing Canton tonight. So after a successful fall season, winter sports are kicking off, very encouraging start. And gymnastics also beat Sharon in their home opener. In other general school news, the first mask optional day was yesterday, and then we also continued with that today. Went well, everyone has been following the current rules and guidance. And other than that, everyone is just excited for break, just trying to push through these last couple of days, last week or so, and get it for a little break in between the semester. So other than that, no other news.
Thank you very much. Committee, any questions, comments, Camille?
I was wondering if, I remember Dr. Hearn, you'd said in Hopkinton, 40% of VAC students continue to mask. Did we have any numbers? I know it's just 2 days, but.
So we have, I'll share more in the superintendent's report, if that's okay.
Sure.
Okay.
Anything?
No, thank you very much.
Yeah?
No, thank you. No questions.
Nothing at this time. Thank you.
I'm all set. Thank you. Megan?
No questions for me, Madam Chairman.
thank you so very much, and I hope you have a lovely break. Dr. Hearn, Superintendent Hearn?
Sure, I have a few things to share with the committee this evening. First off, we had a professional development day on Friday, December 10th, which just passed. It was a half day. And the next one is coming up on January 14th, also a half day of professional development and school in the morning for students. On Friday the 10th, the buildings hosted professional development, so it was tailored to the various buildings and levels. At the preschool, our educators are in professional learning communities, working and learning together in a couple of key areas, including Foundations, which is an early literacy program, Handwriting Without Tears, DECA, which is a SEL assessment for our youngest students, and something called Playmakers. At the elementary level, they focused on the DESA assessment in order to complete an initial screening around SEL skills for students in K through 5. We expanded that to all elementary schools this year, so that was new learning for those teachers. At the middle level, the building principals rolled out multi-tiered systems of support, particularly for behavioral interventions. And at the high school teachers continued to work on curriculum development with a focus working with course partners and including SEL and DEI components into units. I too want to congratulate our unified basketball team. Mm-hmm. There was a competitive process by which they were selected to represent the state of Massachusetts in the 2022 US Games, traveling to Orlando, Florida in June to compete through the Special Olympics. We are so proud of our athletes, peers, and coaches. And the school committee can expect an extended field trip request to come your way in order to support their trip. Also in athletics news, want to congratulate Ms. Paula Lupia. She was named as the MIAA Gymnastics Coach of the Year, and Mr. Angelo was quoted in a report recently that he attributes the success of our gymnastics program to Coach Lupian's meticulous attention to detail, her love for her student athletes, and overall dedication to the coaching profession. And then lastly, I'll take a little bit more time to provide an update on masks at Franklin High School. Mr. Hanna is viewing the webinar with us this evening and can maybe share a little bit more from his perspective about how things are going. So as you know, with approval from the state and based on the last school committee meeting, we've lifted the mask mandate for vaccinated students and staff. If students and have had their parents or guardians complete the verification form. And we've had a number of verification forms completed both by Friday and continuing into the weekend. And an estimate by Mr. Hanna yesterday when I asked was that about 75% of the students were choosing to unmask at the high school. And about 40% of faculty were choosing to unmask at the high school. So there were certainly vaccinated and unvaccinated students continuing to mask yesterday and today. We're keeping track of numbers, so want to reassure everybody that we're keeping track of numbers. We know that case counts are going up. The numbers in the Franklin Public Schools continue to climb more with the younger students, although we are seeing a few more high school cases in recent weeks than we had in the first 2 months of school. I do want to take a moment to remind everybody that students are still required to mask while riding buses. That is a federal mandate, as well as in the school nurses' offices. Couple of changes to practice in terms of our health and safety protocols are relevant with this choice for vaccinated students and staff. For close contact tracing, we're expanding the definition to be inclusive of individuals within 6 feet because there may be no masks being worn. So rather than 3 feet, which is what we're doing in the pre-K to 8 schools. There is no change to test and stay. So there was a misspeak at the last meeting around being able to expand test and stay. We cannot expand test and stay. Test and stay is limited to our unvaccinated, non-exempt close contacts who are asymptomatic. Vaccinated individuals cannot participate in test and stay. And that is a Department of Education rule. That's not something that's up to our discretion. Our expanded definition of close contacts in that 6 feet, though, should expand the number of individuals who could be eligible for test and stay from the unvaccinated group. I can share some numbers with you. They're on a report queued up for the screen about where we were last week. I know a lot of people were perhaps wondering why we continued to move forward with unmasking beginning on Monday for vaccinated individuals. And that was because the decision that was made on the 23rd of November involved a metric of 4%. So the Department of Public Health's percent positivity rate that came out last Thursday, and this is a chart that we update on a weekly basis. Are you able to zoom in at all, Mr. Jagir?
Yes.
On that last line, the percent positivity in Franklin was 3.27%. So it is over 4% in the state of Massachusetts, and we, on a daily basis, weekly basis, monitor that percent positivity rate and expect the next report to come out on Thursday, December 16th at 5 p.m. And we'll be watching that regarding a decision for the following Monday. I think it would be hard to get the word out for Friday, but by Monday, we can encourage people on Friday to mask and then on Monday require them again, should we be 4% or higher. So these are the numbers that we've been monitoring. We also have been talking and keeping track of our own data in Franklin Public Schools and keeping track of numbers, as well as talking with the town and the health department. And one of the things to keep in mind are where the numbers are coming from. Behind the numbers, we're aware of any clusters, we're aware of particular populations that are involved in the numbers, and so I know it's alarming, and we're certainly, we certainly have our own apprehension with everything we're hearing in the news and the case counts going up. So we are taking it very, very seriously. But there is there is additional information that we have behind the scenes around some of the cases and some of the numbers. If you want to scroll further and share all of the, there's a chart of the data since the beginning of the year. The orange is the percent positivity, and the blue are the cases. So we had a spike, I think, back in August with percent positivity, and you can see that it's coming back up. You scroll down below. We're also keeping track of weekly vaccination report. And keep going. Thank you.
Sorry.
So as of December 10th, we're looking at 37% of children ages 5 through 11 in Franklin have had one dose, and 17% have had two doses of the vaccine. The other columns are other populations and other ages. We're keeping track of the total cases and the total number of in-person cases that we've had since the beginning of the year. We do have 129 students in quarantine, so that's the largest number that we've seen thus far. The number of faculty and staff in quarantine continue to be low. The number on the right there should be 6. We publish this on Mondays, so Lily takes this and makes it into a graphical representation and publishes it on our website, and she's going to be sending home a newsletter from the district tomorrow, and it will have the helpful link in there so people know where to find it regularly. I think we'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have. Camille?
None.
David?
So just to confirm, if on Thursday evening, should the numbers be over 4%, our high school families would then be, receive an email notification at some point before Sunday so they can kind of prepare and?
Yes. Yep. Yes. So we would send a notification out, I think, encouraging them to mask on Friday, but requiring it on Monday.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah. So piggybacking on that question, so if it does get to 4%, they would wear masks until after it gets below 4%? Is that?
Yes. Okay. Yep.
And then just from a display standpoint, given that we have a lot of data here and there's a lot of scrolling, Would it be possible to reverse the order so that the newest is at the top and the oldest is at the bottom?
We can do that. Okay. Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All set?
Yeah.
All right, Dave?
No questions.
Elise?
I just want to just confirm one thing that I think I heard you say, just to make sure that I'm understanding it correctly, Dr. Hearn. So vaccinated students can't take advantage of the test and stay if they're close contacts in school. Okay.
Yes.
And has it been that way the whole time? My oldest just got fully
vaccinated. Yep, it's been that way the whole time.
Gotcha. Okay. And just to shift gears a little bit, can I give a quick shout out to the music department, the Franklin Public School Music Department, the music boosters, the staff, and all the students who are participating in the concerts that are being held this month. They're putting on 7 in-person concerts with the band, the orchestra, the chorus, and it's just amazing to have everybody in a room together and listening to the music and everybody playing together in person. It's just really powerful and makes me feel optimistic, and it's a nice way to celebrate the season. So thank you for everyone.
That's it. Megan?
Thank you for that presentation, Dr. Hearn, and I don't have any questions.
Thanks, Megan. I just wanted to clarify just one number that you threw out. For the authorization forms, so it said 75% of students. Is that 75% of vaccinated students or 75% of all students at FHS?
So the number that I threw out was just a quick ballpark of the number who were unmasked. So those would have been vaccinated students in the entire population.
Okay. Right. Thank you very much. Nothing else. Dr. Hearn, guests and presentations?
Sure. So first up, I have a special presentation and a recognition of a recent school committee member who is here in the audience this evening.
She should come up, right?
I think so.
Yes.
Yeah. You should come up. I don't know, she should stand somewhere so we can all look at her.
How's here?
So at this time, I wish to recognize our recent school committee member, MJ Schofield. And thank you so much for joining us tonight. MJ served from 1997 to 2007 and then took a 10-year break from the Franklin School Committee. She then served again from 2015 to 2021 and was part of the school committee that hired me in 2017. MJ has been dedicated to Franklin's children, not only through the school committee, but also through other avenues such as PCCs and serving as a youth coach. Highlights of her recent tenure on the school committee include significant contributions to the policy subcommittee, including the homework policy, a more equitable dress code policy, a thorough review of the B policies for school committee governance, a modern social media policy, and very significant COVID-related policies in the 2021 school year. She has also served recently as a member of the School Start Times Advisory Committee and the Davis Thayer Facilities Analysis Subcommittee. And in her first tenure on the Franklin School Committee, she was a major contributor to the Keller Sullivan Building Project, and so I want to be sure to recognize that. MJ, we want to thank you for your deep dedication and contributions to the Franklin Public Schools as a school committee member. Please accept a token and a small gift of our appreciation.
I do appreciate being asked to return and be recognized. It would be nice to still be a member of the select group, but since I'm not, I have something that all of you will be searching for soon, and that's free time, which is actually pretty nice. Over the years, I've had the opportunity to work with at least 26 different school committee members. I'm sure I've missed some. And five superintendents. It's no secret that I wasn't politically aligned with most of them, but we never let that get in the way. We always respected each other's views, talked about our differences, and came up with solutions that could work. It wasn't rocket science. It was people working together to achieve a common goal. I could tell many stories, but I won't. But one, there have been countless committee and subcommittee meetings over the years, the 2 a.m. negotiation sessions in the old Franklin High School library. That's when we didn't do interest-based bargaining. There were some really long meetings. Keller Sullivan meetings, dress code, homework, school start times, Davis Fair facilities analysis, and who can forget the policy meetings dealing with masks. Some of the most favored memories. But we listened, we learned, and we moved ahead. A few pieces of advice for you. Something I was told years ago by our current town council chair, and I've shared this with Elise and Denise. And I only share it because many of you have younger children. At one point, my son was a younger child, and at one of those negotiating sessions at the high school, I mentioned that I was missing a Little League game. And I was told point blank, don't do that. Your kids always come first. Don't forget that. It was great advice, Mr. Mercer. Keep an eye on what the town council and other boards in town are doing, because you know that they're going to be watching you. Remind them of the many things that were talked about during the this past election cycle. Review of the town charter is one thing that comes to my mind. Always ask questions, even if it makes people feel uncomfortable. Softball questions are great, but the tough ones are likely the meaningful ones. While you're one of seven on the committee, always remember that you represent a wide range of people in town. Ultimately, you're responsible for ensuring a top quality education for all of our students. Please continue to reach out to all citizens, not only those with kids in the system. You have a tough road ahead of you, and I hope that you all remain true to yourselves. Listen, learn, continue to move the district ahead, and always do what's right and best for all. I wish you nothing but success. Finally, it's less than 25 minutes. Am I okay, Spencer?
Yes.
And finally, I'd like to say that I so appreciate the opportunity I was given to serve on the school committee over the years. It was a heck of a ride. That's it.
You have to stay. I just have a small little bit to say. I'm not as long-winded as you, but I'll keep it short. Seriously, working with you over the past 2 years has been an honor and a privilege. I just want to highlight the exceptional level of commitment and dedication you've given during your years of service, especially during this pandemic. I do not know of anyone else who has worked as hard for the public schools as you have. You truly have made a world of difference for our educators, staff, students, and families. MJ, not only are you a remarkable public servant, you are an amazing mentor and an even better friend. I've learned so much from you. I've always depended on you, your expertise, and historical knowledge. You are just extraordinary. I can't ever thank you enough. I refuse to let you go. I'm still going to be texting you and calling you and emailing you, so you're stuck with me. seriously though, thank you very much for everything and enjoy all of your free time.
Thanks, Spencer. I'm changing my phone number.
I know your address, I know where you live.
Can't get away from that.
So now you can go home.
Okay, all right, thank you.
Okay. All right.
So next on the agenda for guests and presentations is we have a presentation about the Lifelong Learning Institute. Ms. Patty Gay is serving as the Interim Director of Lifelong Learning, and she'll come up to the table for this presentation. And while she gets settled, I'll just give you a little bit of background information. Pre-pandemic, the Lifelong Learning Director would come and present to school committee usually at the end of the summer, beginning of the school year, to talk about our summer programs as well as to talk about school year programs. We got a little bit out of that rhythm with the pandemic, and Patty is here to talk about our Lifelong Learning Institute now. Lifelong learning, along with a few other key areas, I mean, Franklin Public Schools, all of the school systems in the world were affected by the pandemic. But what might be a little less seen and a little bit more hidden is that people weren't hit the same and weren't hit as hard equally across all departments within an organization. And lifelong learning took a particularly tough hit during the pandemic in terms of its after-school programs as well as the enrichment offerings that are provided to students. And so this is a bit of rebuilding, and Patty has leaned in to the effort in terms of bringing staff back, boosting and keeping up morale, and providing services that our families really depend upon. So I want to thank Patty for all of her work that she's done so far this year in stabilizing the department, and then thinking forward as well about growth opportunities too. So Patty, with that, I'm going to turn it over to you. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me tonight. I really appreciate it. And thank you, Dr. Hearn, for the nice introduction. So I am Patty Gay, and I am the Interim Director of Lifelong Learning, and I'm happy to talk to you tonight about our programs. Just an overview of our programs. Within Lifelong Learning, we have the Solutions Program, which is our enriching educational program that we offer in each of the five elementary schools in Franklin, and that is the before and after school program as well. And if you would excuse me for 1 minute, I've got my reading glasses. We have our community learning, and that offers a variety of educational and interesting classes, programming, workshops, and all for all area residents, including kids through our Kids Corner programs. Our music academy is our after-school group classes in band, chorus, strings, and private music lessons, and we also offer a two-week music program as well. And then we also offer summer programs, which are fun and enriching summer classes for students in grades K through 12, plus the high school experience. We welcome our ninth grade students to the high school. The mission of Lifelong Learning, Lifelong Learning Institute strives to meet the dynamic needs of our community by providing area residents of all ages with high quality extended day childcare, music lessons, enrichment programs, and an affordable and safe environment. First, I'm going to highlight the Solutions Program. Solutions is committed to providing enriching educational and recreational opportunities for our kindergarten through fifth grade students within a safe and stimulating environment. Our safe and enriching program offers before school, which opens at 7 a.m., our after-school program that runs till 6 p.m. That's Monday through Friday on school days, and we're located at each of the elementary schools in Franklin. Our community learning program, Lifelong Community Learning, is a program of Franklin Public Schools Lifelong Learning Institute dedicated to providing diverse and enriched educational and experiences for all residents and children. It's a resource for all ages. And programs for that department include arts and crafts, lifestyle and culture, exercise and wellness, as well as sports teams, workshops and special events, online learning, and Kids Corner, which is our kids division, which is for students in grades K through 8. The Lifelong Music Academy is proud to offer educational, rewarding, and fun music classes for all ages. Our instructors are truly passionate about sharing the joy of music, and year after year, our students benefit from their enthusiasm. Programs within the Music Academy include the String School for students in grades 3 through 12, the Band School for students in grades 4 through 9, the Chorus School, which currently is offering Glee for students in grades 3 through 5. We also do private music lessons for all ages, and we also offer a summer music program as well. That's a two-week half-day program. And we also offer Franklin High School Music Mentor Program. We have mentors that are in our programs now currently, as well as we have mentors in our summer programs as well. Just to highlight summer programs of 2021, we were truly happy to be able to offer programs last summer. We did so at a limited capacity, but we were super excited to be back and offering students quality programs. We offered Solution Summer Adventure for 5 weeks, and that was an 8:30 to 3:30 option, which is a little bit less than what we normally do, but kids came and had a great time and had lots of fun. We offered Ready Set Kindergarten, which is a great program for our incoming kindergarten students. We ran that for 3 weeks. Music was able to run a two-week music program. We did our high school experience a little bit differently this summer. We offered two one-day programs for our incoming freshmen, and we also ran a one-day program for our 10th graders who had missed out on that opportunity the summer before. So that gave them the opportunity to come in and connect with other 10th grade students. And we were also able to offer our college prep courses, which include writing a college essay, as well as the Common App Boot Camp. Looking forward to summer of 22, we're looking forward to offering our full offerings again this summer, which is really exciting. We're hoping to do a Solution Summer Adventure for 5 weeks, and we're going to revert back to our full-day options. STAR, which includes Ready Set Kindergarten, STEM, which includes the Math Academy, Summer Music, High School Experience, we'll go back to a three-day program, and the college prep courses as well, including the college essay and the Common App Boot Camp. And as previous summers, we're also hoping to offer some community learning opportunities. Events in the past have included basketball, volleyball, and some group sports. So we're looking forward to that, and registration for that opens on February 1st. Just going to talk a little bit about how our programs and how we try to align them with our district improvement plan. I'm going to first talk about the social emotional well-being of students and staff. Through our solutions program, we offer movement and mindfulness, as well as staff training. Community learning offers dance, exercise, and wellness. They offer childcare classes for those who teach or are working in a childcare, and those are trainings for those for the childcare workers. and as well as a home safety and security with the Franklin Police Department, and that's a course that we're going to be offering in January. In our summer offers Ready Set Kindergarten as well as the high school experience. Engaging and rigorous curriculum. The Solutions Program offers themed curriculum, which includes both monthly and yearly curriculum themes. We offer a junior leader program for our older students that participate, so our grade 5 students. Give them a little, give them a leadership, have them be good role models, and have them participate in different activities. And we also offer a homework club. Summer program includes the STEM Institute, summer music, as well as our college prep courses. And for music, the engaging and rigorous curriculum is in our all of our band strings and glee program as well. High quality instruction to meet the academic and social-emotional learning needs of each learner. Our summer program, again, the Ready Set Kindergarten program, which is a great program to get our students prepared for kindergarten, and then our oldest population preparing for college. For music, we offer private music lessons, and also across the board different project-based opportunities. Finally, our effective two-way communication to support student learning. Our music program offers weekly updates and feedback. Also, we are really fortunate to be able to have community involvement as well through our community learning partnerships that we do courses with for the lifelong community learning. Franklin Downtown Partnership, the Franklin Public Library, Franklin Cultural District, as well as community input and feedback, and also through our course evaluations, which happen at the conclusion of all our courses. This is a depiction of our homepage of our website, which is franklinlifelonglearning.com. Again, I want to thank you for the opportunity for speaking with you tonight. I really appreciate it. And I also want to give a special thank you to all that help support our programs, because we can't do it by ourselves. So some of our supporters include central office, facilities, technology, student services, and more. They really help us to be able to carry all of this out. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. I guess I'll just go through the committee and see if there's any questions or comments.
Yeah,
Camille?
I just wanted to say thank you. My kids have participated in all four pillars, and shout out to those solutions ladies who helped raise my kids. I miss them.
Thank you so much. Dave?
Just to piggyback on that, we only have experience with the solutions staff, Ms. Kara, at the Kennedy School System, but absolutely fantastic. I'm sure it's the staff is really kind of like that success is replicated across the board.
We just went
through the junior leader program with my daughter, and it was amazing to see her really kind of focus, write the essay that she had to do, and advocate for herself and promote herself. So just great job for everybody, the entire staff.
Thank you so much.
And I have one question. With so many of these great programs, are there any considerations for low-income families?
We are a self-sustaining organization, so our tuition helps support our program. Not help support, they support our programs. We do offer scholarships in some of our programs for those that qualify for free and reduced lunch.
Wonderful. Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Yep, well, thank you for your time tonight. Definitely appreciate this. Just like the others, definitely took advantage of the solutions program in the morning. Definitely made it easy as a parent to be able to drop Michelle at the school and just go from there to the classroom.
Sure.
But in addition to that, I was able to take part of the some of the yoga programs that were there as well, which was nice. And it's always good to see the packets that come in and say, look, see what courses are being offered.
Great.
And really see if it fits. And I hope others in the community take advantage of this as well, because there are great offerings that are close to town and great opportunity to meet other people that you might not meet in your normal circles. So so thank you for sharing. I appreciate that.
Thank you so much. Dave?
Yes, through you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Patty. This was an excellent presentation. Really appreciate how you demonstrated that your programs are fitting into with our district's improvement plan and our district goals.
Yeah.
To that end, I have a couple questions in regards to how these programs kind of integrate and complement what the students are learning in school.
Sure.
To your knowledge, have there been instances where feedback from a particular program has led to something being adapted to an in-school curriculum, or has student performance in any of these programs affected how certain classes are being taught in school?
Although I don't think that we depict how things are taught in school, we do want, as we've had seen from the district improvement plan, that we do try to enhance some of those initiatives throughout the day. And one example would be our social emotional learning activities that we do with the students. But we do take that into consideration.
Excellent. And then, in regards to the STEM courses, are those a complement to what's being taught at school, or is that completely new and novel information compared to the curricula that students will be learning at school?
Yeah, that would be a complement to what is being offered during the school day. The STEM that we offer over the summer is primarily Franklin Public Schools teachers. So it's what they teach, and when we have students in STEM as well as Math Academy, they just have a love of STEM and math, and it just gives them more time to dedicate to those subjects. So although it's not new content, it can expand just merely because they have the freedom of time and the ability to do more exploration while they're doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can see how that could be of immense benefit to the students that are passionate about those subject areas, how that can enhance their further learning in the classroom as well they're doing on.
Absolutely.
Then in regards to college preparatory class, I think that's excellent that we're giving our students as much opportunity to get that edge ahead of time as possible. It seems very valuable. Could you just maybe expand a bit on what is done in these courses, and maybe is there a potential to add new college preparatory courses to continue to have Franklin students be prepared for the next step?
Yeah, Lifelong Learning started offering Widener College Essay first, and then we added the Common Ed Bootcamp. Mm-hmm. Widener College Essay is a very popular course.
Yeah.
It definitely gives incoming seniors a jump start. The essay on college applications is so important. It really reflects who the student is and where they want to go. And through the instructors that we have teaching the course, they're able to explore the essay as well as other questions on the application and help students to work through those and help them get to a point where they, upon the completion of the course, have at least one essay that they'll be able to use in the college applications.
Can I piggyback on that,
of course.
Patty? During my time as an assistant principal, that program had just started, and my office, I was displaced for a period of time, so I sat in the same library where the first group of kids had gone through that process. So I basically observed this this course, and the way our teachers approach that process, and having students, picture a student in their senior year, the summer before their senior year, to be able to walk away 2 weeks later with a really firm draft, clearly written, at a time in the summer where now they can sit let that percolate and enter their senior year with all the other competing interests that they have to do to keep up with grades and then meet those deadlines to submit. That was the start, and I think that's been a tremendous benefit to our students, and it's not surprising to me that it's grown, and particularly as families encourage their children to take advantage of that opportunity, get that real support that they need, and then to build off of that, the Common App then, Lifelong Learning has done a great job of responding to the needs of students and families, and that was from feedback given, like, hey, this Common App is something that needs to be done, and there's a lot of pieces to it, and our guidance department has worked with our families, but this was an additional resource, and so just a credit to you and your team for just evolving that whole process. So,
and we do work with guidance as well. So as far as expanding or offering new programs, we're always open to new ideas. The two that we're running right now are very successful, and it's a nice check to have. To have those things done before you start your senior year, so.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the fact that you're offering the Common App course and in response to feedback from the community, now that's fantastic. Yep. And also what you were mentioning, Lucas, with that every student has an essay that they can write, and it sounds like a very valuable offering. As I certainly remember, going back to my college and grad school applications, the essay can be such a daunting thing, just kind of overwhelming, hanging over you. So that sounds like something that's of a great benefit to everyone participating. No, that's wonderful. Then, in regards, so apart from public health measures, how have these programs seem to be adapted to best address needs of the students during the pandemic? So just wondering, the specific needs that popped up during the pandemic, how have the lifelong learning programs been able to kind of supplement and adapt and help students in the pandemic specific needs?
Sure. And as Sarah had mentioned, we are in a rebuilding year. When we started back to school originally back last year, we offered hybrid models for our students in the Solutions program. And that would enable, when they're in school, to have that care before and after school. We were able to continue with virtual private music lessons as well, as far as things that we were able to run last year. And we have an online component through our Lifelong Community Learning program as well. And those online classes were quite popular last year as well. But as far as when, private music lessons too were virtual as well. So as far as making accommodations for students as they return and help them to keep safe, we followed all the guidelines that were in place for Franklin Public Schools. We just had to look at things differently like everybody did. And so you just start to look at the things that you were used to using every day, materials and supplies and things like that, and just looking at it a little bit differently and doing individual student supplies so that they could not have shared materials. Things that couldn't be sanitized, a lot of cloth toys, dress up, pretend play, those kinds of things we still have those on the back burner so that things that we do have we're able to clean and sanitize and be used safely. And then as our back to school increased, as we moved from hybrid to in school, we made those adjustments as well. We had, were able to meet the needs, we had some students that were doing hybrid for 2 days and then they moved to 4 days, so we just tried to work with parents and give them that option as we navigated our way back to school.
Excellent, that's wonderful you're able to adapt that way. Virtual private music lessons, it sounds like something. Wow.
Yeah, that's
incredible.
Yeah, it was. It's nice to be able to keep as many components as we could and do it in a safe and effective way. And it was very popular. The parents and students really liked that option. So,
Absolutely. And then just a last question. What has some of the community feedback been for these programs, and how have programs change in response to community feedback? You mentioned implementing the Common App course based on community feedback, which is wonderful. So I'm just wondering, yeah, how is how have these programs developed given the feedback that you've received?
We're very happy to have, we're back and we're doing almost to full capacity. So just being in person and having that interaction with parents and students, it has been very positive. That's one of the nicest ways to receive feedback is just face-to-face conversations. And it's really nice to be able to do that again. So we also, when we do courses and classes, we offer evaluations at the end of each course. And those evaluations ask questions such as, what did you think of the course? How was the instructor? How did you find the times that we offered the course? Any feedback that that people want to give us, we're happy to receive. And as far as then we look at that and try to offer new things. We also have a space on our website that allows individuals to just come on and say, if they're interested in a particular course or there's something they need to see. We get feedback from them that way as well.
Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Please. I just want to echo the gratitude from the parents here on the sitting here about all the programs. My kids have done so many of them. My daughter is a little toddler, was always talking about the American Girl camp and when is she going to be old enough. And so that she's able to do that. She has a picture hanging in her room. There were some dark days there during COVID for lifelong learning, and I think we would get the updates, and it was pretty touch and go there. And I think that it's to hear that you're almost back at full capacity is just amazing, and just speaks to the resilience and creativity of you and all your staff, and like you're saying, reimagining everything. Mm-hmm. And so I just kudos to you for taking the helm, and really really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Congratulations for getting this far. Thanks.
Megan?
Thank you so much. I think this is a great service. My daughter, Genevieve, really enjoyed learning cello through this.
Nice.
But that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Megan. I just wanted to echo along with the other parents. My son loved his time with Solutions, so thank you very much. And thank you for sharing all these details about your programs. I hope that the community continues to take advantage of everything. I also think it's important that if they do go to your website, the franklinlifelonglearning.com, you can easily, right on the front page as I'm looking at it, you can sign up today to join your email list, which is great because I love getting the emails with all the offerings and the brochures. So I hope people do log on and sign up because they're really worthwhile. So thank you very much for sharing everything.
Thank you so much.
Anybody else? Nothing? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Patty.
Thank you.
All right, Dr. Hearn.
Okay, so the next discussion action items. The first discussion action item is to dissolve the Transportation Subcommittee. And there's a memo in your packet describing a little bit of the rationale as to why. This was formed by a previous school committee with the purpose of recommending and reviewing policies regarding transportation and developing bids for transportation, collaborating on the bid process. In practice, the Transportation Committee Subcommittee has not met in my time in Franklin, which would have dated back to July of 2017. The school committee can certainly continue to maintain responsibility for recommending and reviewing policies regarding transportation through the Policy Subcommittee, and I think we've recently looked at some of those, not this past year, but maybe the prior year. And the bid process, in my opinion, is more operational. We go out to bid for lots of things for which the school committee doesn't participate. It's executed by the school business administrator and the superintendent of schools. However, you certainly provide oversight through the budget process. So therefore, I recommend that the school committee dissolve the Transportation Subcommittee.
Okay. Is there a motion to dissolve the Transportation Subcommittee as discussed?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion questions? Okay.
You should do a roll call vote.
Sorry. No, it's okay. seeing none, we'll take a roll call vote on the motion. All right, so Camille?
Yes.
David Callahan?
Aye.
Al Charles?
Yes.
Dave McNeil?
Yes.
Lee Stokes?
Yes.
Megan Whitmore?
Yes.
All right, and Denise Spencer? Yes. All right.
Great, thank you.
Okay. Motion carries. Dr. Hearn, on to B.
Great. So the next discussion action item, I think sometimes we may put it in the consent agenda as this is a recurring field trip now that I think about it, but I'm a little out of practice with respect to putting these on school committee agendas. But now that I think about it, we often put recurring field trips in the consent agenda. But that's okay. The DECA Club has a request on the part of the advisor to take students to the state competition in Boston, Massachusetts, which occurs March 10th through 12th. There is some detail in your packet regarding this request. Per policy, anything that is an overnight stay or a travel out of state requires school committee approval. And so I recommend approval of the request of Miguel Carmo to take students to the DECA state competition in Boston, Massachusetts from March 10th through 12th, 2022, as detailed.
Okay. Is there a motion to approve the request of Miguel Carmo to take students to the DECA state competition in Boston, Massachusetts from March 10th through 12th, 2022, as discussed?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion, questions? Camille?
I suppose this will be one of many times that I get verklempt, but I have to say when I looked at this agenda, I cried because I was so excited people are going on field trips again. I just cried, and the whole time anticipating it, my tears have been coming again. So I'm just so excited.
Dave?
Al?
No questions.
Dave. You don't want to share that you cried.
Yes, through you, Madam Chair. A couple questions. Dr. Hearn, how many Franklin students are expected to participate and how many have taken part in the past?
Sure. So we're anticipating between 80 and 100 Franklin High School students to participate. And in 2020, we had 60 students participate.
Wow.
So huge numbers.
Yeah, that's a big group. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Because this looks like an excellent opportunity for these students to just learn just a plethora of valuable skills that are applicable both in high school and after graduation. So that's wonderful. And to that, I mean, these sound like very valuable skills that they'll be able to learn through these events. Can you tell us a little bit more just about the format of the competition and how it's judged and how students receive feedback on their work so they can take that and apply it afterwards?
Sure. So there's two types of formats for competition. There are, the first is written events, which is a 10 to 20 page paper, which is 60% of the score, and a 15 minute presentation, which is 40% of the score. So that's the first type of event. Then there's also role play and case study types of events. Students receive an on-the-spot case study and have 10 minutes for individual events and 30 minutes for team events to analyze the case and develop a 10 to 15 minute presentation. Students in these events also complete a 100-part multiple choice exam, which is factored into their overall score, and students receive a rubric from the judges after their competition for feedback.
Sounds like just excellent opportunities to both develop critical thinking and problem solving skills.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And lastly, I see that funding is available to help low-income students be able to attend, which is excellent. Between the profit sharing, the fundraisers, and the aid, are the costs typically covered in their entirety for those who couldn't otherwise afford to go?
According to the advisor, the costs have not been covered in their entirety through fundraising, although they do try to do as much fundraising as possible. DECA runs our school store, and so that is one of their big fundraisers. We do have a financial assistance policy through the school committee policy manual, which allows for principals to, with available funding they may have at the school level, to support various activities for those who require some support. But it's not entirely covered and kind of pertinent maybe to the workshop discussion we had previously. Mm-hmm.
Sure. Thank you.
Sure. Okay. Elise?
I'm all set.
Megan?
I'm all set too. Thank you.
Dr. Hunt, I just had a question. I was just wondering, are we taking any kind of additional precautions for overnight trips in regards to COVID?
We don't have anything in the Franklin School Committee policy related to that. That may be something that we want to discuss through the policy subcommittee. I could find out what additional requirements DECA as an organization requires. I anticipate that they will have some requirements. Similarly, when you get the unified basketball request, that was one of the things that I had asked early on as they were competing for the potential trip is, you know, what are some of the expectations that the organization will hold itself. So at this point, I don't know, but I do anticipate that there would be, by the host, some safety measures.
And then I'm just wondering, like, maybe also adding something about, I'd hate for a family to sign up and pay, and then what if they're put into quarantine or labeled as a close contact? So, like, is there a way to maybe, I don't want to say mandate the insurance for travel, but just to kind of help people cover, you know, because I would hate for people to spend this money and then the day before they go to leave, they can't make it and then they're out that money.
I can look into what the cancellation is. I don't recall seeing anything in here. But we can take a look at that.
Okay.
And try to, I think we'd be trying to help families recoup costs. I don't know that we would be able to guarantee that.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking about when we had to cancel the EF tour, we had an overseas trip.
Yeah.
We were able to work with EF to get more back than the original, non-refundable deposit policy, but there was a certain expense incurred by the organization in planning for it, so I'm not sure that we'd be able to get the full refund, but we can certainly take a look at that.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, so we have a motion and a section, so a second, sorry, motion and a second. So we'll take a roll call vote. Camille?
Yes.
David Callahan?
Yes.
Al?
Yes.
Dave McNeil?
Yes.
Elise?
Yes.
Megan?
Yes.
Denise?
Yes.
All right, 7-0. All right, on to C, Dr.
Hey, the next one is an out-of-state field trip, and this is at the request of Mr. Cadenhead and Mr. Carmo to take the National Business Honor Society students to New York City for a day. Their itinerary is included in a memo. Regarding going to the Stock Exchange and Wall Street and various areas in New York City. I do want to note that since the packet went out on Friday, they have requested to change the date from April 9th to April 2nd. And so an updated version of the memo was placed in your school committee packet alongside the original memo. So with that, I recommend approval of the request of Paul Cadenhead and Miguel Carmo to take the National Business Honor Society students to New York City on April 2nd to visit the Stock Exchange, Wall Street, and the World Trade Center as detailed.
Is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Any discussion, questions? Let's go down. Camille, Dave Callahan.
So both of these field trips are incredible. This one, it truly just floored me.
Did you cry?
I didn't cry, but I was loud.
You don't feel it.
No questions.
Didn't feel?
I'd just like to say, I think it's fantastic that we have this opportunity being offered for our students.
Mm-hmm. Elise?
I guess my only question would be, would there be sort of the same group of kids able to go to both? I saw DECA was mentioned in this one too.
Yeah, I think there will be overlap between the two.
Mm-hmm. Well, great. Megan?
I think these sound like great trips, and I'm also happy to, you know, see these trips starting up again. But that's all I have. Thank you.
And just my same questions, we'll just put them in this one.
Yeah.
All right, so we have a motion and a second. So
So we'll take a roll call vote on the motion. Camille?
Yes.
David Callahan?
Yes.
Al?
Yes.
Dave McNeil?
Yes.
Elise?
Yes.
Megan?
Yes.
All right, and Denise?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. So that discussion action items, so discussion only items. Dr. Hearn?
Discussion only, just wanted to share with you anticipated school committee meeting dates for the 22-23 year, so you can have them in your calendars. We typically have two meetings per month per policy, the second and fourth Tuesdays. It does change a little bit. We often only have one meeting in July based on people's schedules and less business to attend to, where we had a workshop prior to a regular business meeting. The date of that, I think, falls on the third Tuesday. The second Tuesday has typically been the superintendent's executive institute, and so we've typically attended that professional development session. The other meeting dates are the second and fourth Tuesdays. The fourth Tuesday in December, I think, falls on December 27th. So in talking with Denise, we thought that one meeting in December might make sense given people's schedules. And then the rest of the meetings are listed there for the remainder of the year. So no action needs to be taken, just sharing this with you for information.
Anyone have any questions, comments? Nope. Megan, any questions, comments?
No questions or comments from me. Thank you.
Okay, perfect. All right, moving on to information matters. I will just go through the list. So we've got superintendent evaluation. I'm assuming nothing going on.
Not assuming wrong.
No, nothing yet. We're gonna pull the band together.
Okay, great, perfect. Budget.
Sorry. I'm playing cowbell.
I know. Budget, Dave McNeil.
We'll be having our first meeting this Thursday at 7:30, so looking forward to getting to work on that. All right.
Thursday at what time?
7:30.
Okay. Community relations, I'll be scheduling a meeting soon. Policy, David Callahan.
We will be having our first meeting on January 5th at 6 p.m.
Joint PCCs, I know there was a meeting this afternoon?
Yes.
It was.
Yes, so we had our first meeting with the PCCs today. Great opportunity to meet the leaders of the PCCs. We had talked about a little bit of the COVID concerns that that was going on that Dr. Hearn had alluded to earlier today. And then they shared with us the ongoing of the PCCs. So I believe it was Remington that had partnered with Unlikely Story in Plainville, where they did a book fair. So instead of using Scholastics like they would normally do, they went with Unlikely Stories, and it was a different experience in the sense that we were partnered with a local company, and just the process seemed a little bit better, at least from what I gathered anyway. It was nice just to just have a different perspective, and I think this is something that the other PC should look into and try to partner with somebody local just to help somebody close to town and just really build those connections within the community. So looking forward to the next meeting. I think our next meeting is on January 10th. So more to come then.
All right, perfect. Yeah, one of the things I know is Christmas list was an Unlikely Story gift card. Mm-hmm. So we love Unlikely Story in my house. School Wellness Advisory Council, I'm looking for Lucas.
Our next SWAC meeting will be on January 4th. We just had a meeting recently this week. We invited our new school committee liaisons and continued our work. We're in the process of reviewing our wellness policy. We've talked before about the coaching we're receiving through the state. We were assigned a coach who kicked off our year, and we finished phase two of our policy review. The coach is rejoining us at the January 4th meeting, where we'll present the feedback and recommendations to add to the policy. And then our hope is we will have something prepared to share with Dr. Hearn and then with the policy subcommittee to move through our process that we have for that. And then in the meantime, we're also going to be looking and setting our sights on the spring to look at what we can offer for community engagement, because policy is fun and it's riveting, but we also enjoy the fun part of the job, which is creating opportunities to engage with the community and positively impact our students in some way. So we'll look to balance this off by the end of the year. So.
Thank you. Substance Abuse Task Force, David Callahan and I attended last night. The group worked on some social media concerns. There were some great ideas thrown around on how other towns are handling the issue with their students and how to educate parents and guardians. There are many presentations that I'd like to share with the SWAT group, as I think Franklin could really benefit. And the next meeting is January 24th. Lucas, I hope to see you there. I did ask that Lucas be included because I think that a lot of the work that the Substance Abuse Task Force does really ties into SWAC. So
we have our Franklin Substance Abuse Task Force and we have a community regionalized one. So Ms. Spencer has been going to, was invited as the chair to join that. So she's invited me to join as well so we can start to build and expand the partnership. And this morning our Franklin-based Substance Abuse Task Force met to look at some of those initiatives as well and look at how we can provide another critical conversations night in the spring. I'm looking at some of the feedback to provide another presentation related to substance use and really gearing it towards parents around recognizing how drugs are packaged, what they look like, what types of substances are out there, identifying signs, and then just working through providing some more education around how students and young people can access drugs through social media. That's one piece. And we're also in the process of looking at providing something that Dr. Hearn has talked about. We were looking to really get that social media presentation off the ground for education. So there'll be two we're looking to plan and coordinate with kind of a multi-committee collaboration. So between our SWAC, or Substance Abuse Task Force, the district-wide Substance Abuse Task Force that's regional, I think we can put together some great content and information for our families.
Thank you. Also, the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Committee met on December 8th. The group worked to identify and plan for key priorities and outcomes for the 2021-2022 school year. You can learn more by visiting the DEI committee website. You can find it by visiting the Franklin Public School District's website. Go to About Us, and underneath that you'll find Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. So click on that and it'll bring you to the website that we've all been working on for the past year, and it's really come together really nicely. So our next meeting is January 12th. Also, in my capacity as chair, I am appointing Elise Stokes as the Franklin Special Education Parent Advisory Council liaison for the full school committee. She will provide updates on CPAC during the information matters portion moving forward. So thank you, Elise.
Thank you.
All right. I think I've covered all of the committees. We'll go to new business. Dr. Hearn?
Sure, thank you. So next meeting is January 11th, and I anticipate that you will have, for you and the community, a presentation related to special education and the range of services that are provided through special education. Mm-hmm. And then a couple of action items related to the budget. One is, the $93,000 budget reduction that has been discussed at Finance Committee and Town Council, the school committee will need to make a decision about how that will affect your a line item in your budget. We'll be meeting with the budget subcommittee to talk that through and bring a recommendation to the full committee for the 11th. And then we are also in the process of working on our FY22 capital requests to the town, and working first through the budget subcommittee to make a recommendation to the full committee on the 11th about our capital request.
Thank you very much. All right, so consent agenda.
I recommend approval of the minutes from the November 23rd, 2021 school committee meeting as detailed. I recommend acceptance of a check for $33 from Campus Box Media for supplemental supplies for the athletics department as detailed. I recommend acceptance of a check for $295 from BJ's Wholesale Club for in-house enrichment district-wide as detailed. I recommend acceptance of a check for $250 from Sean Joubert for the aforementioned FHS scholarship as detailed. And I recommend acceptance of a check for $1,000 from Roberta Trahan for the aforementioned FHS scholarship as detailed.
Is there a motion to approve the consent agenda as detailed?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion, questions? Seeing none, roll call vote on the motion. Camille?
Yes.
Dave Callahan?
Yes.
Al?
Yes.
Dave McNeil?
Yes.
Elise?
Yes.
Megan?
Yes.
All right. Motion carries. All right. Payment of bills. I reviewed Ms. Stokes' payroll.
Yes, I reviewed the payroll and it's in order.
All right. So if there's nothing further, we will move into executive discussion. All right, so let's see. Pursuant to Mass General Law, Chapter 30A, Section 21A3, to discuss strategy with respect to collective bargaining with the FEA RN unit, specifically the grievance file. Oh.
I'm sorry, since we met on Thursday, the posted agenda just has the third reason on there.
Okay. Wait.
All right. Letter C.
All right. Let's try this again. Pursuant to Mass General Law, Chapter 30A, Section 21A2, to conduct collective bargaining with non-union personnel as an open meeting may have a detrimental effect on the bargaining position of the school committee and the chair so declares. I'd like to entertain a motion to adjourn into executive session as discussed, and we will not be returning to open session. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
All right, roll call vote, coming on the motion. Camille?
Yes.
David Callahan?
Yes.
Al Charles?
Yes.
Dave McNeil?
Yes.
Elise Stokes?
Yes.
Megan Whitmore?
Yes.
And Denise Spencer? All right. So thank you very much, everyone. Have a good evening.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.